This is the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing on 105.3 The Fan.
Do not be fooled by substitutes. It's the real thing. The Saturday Morning Test Drive is with you again. Good Saturday morning to you. The A-Team is here. It's David Blassingame.
Good morning.
It's Tammy Pickard.
Good morning.
I'm Dave Whitfield. Sybil is out this weekend, but we'll take care of business for you today during this hour. Van Texas at 43733. Call and be part of the conversation. 877-881-1053. Go to autoflex.com to follow these stories and click on Facebook. Find out more about what we're talking about today, including a very special guest coming up, David, in about a half an hour.
That's right. We're going to have Mark Vann with us, and Mark is the Director of New Business Development for General Motors in Detroit. Met Mark a couple of weeks ago at a conference in Chicago. He's he is sort of the alternative fuel guru. We're going to do a review of the Chevrolet Volt. And Mark is an expert on electric cars and all other kinds of propulsions for cars. And he's going to talk about what we'll be putting in our gas tank in 20 years and in 50 years.
Because there won't be any gas left.
Well, it probably won't be mostly gasoline, I can tell you from talking to him.
Okay.
Maybe we'll get rid of gas tanks altogether.
And have
big alternative fuel tanks.
Alternative D batteries wrapped around our car, something like that.
All kinds of batteries.
He'll tell us. Mark Vann will tell us coming up. That's about a half hour away.
You bet.
Also, our topics start today with the good and the bad of shopping at your corner dealership.
Yeah. What do people hate about car dealerships, and what do people love about
car
dealerships?
Where should we start?
Exactly. You know, there's a website called cargurus.com, and this story is from them, and they polled a number of people about what they really liked and what they really didn't like about car shopping. And so we thought we could start with that because everyone has an opinion on shopping for a car, yeah. I'm sure.
Which list is longer? I'm just wondering.
Well, actually, they balanced it out.
Really?
They did, so, and probably intentionally so. But
I'll tell you what's changed, though, in the past, I'd say, 20-plus years that we've been in the business. The internet has added the only change. They still do the same things that they dislike, but the internet has come into the fold as well.
Kind of give the customer more of an edge, you think?
Well, you know, it makes them more informed, and it also makes the dealer more accessible. You don't have to drive down there to talk to them anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's one of the biggest changes.
You don't have to drive down there to find out about the vehicles.
Exactly. You can go online and learn everything you want to learn about the vehicle. So what it's done is it's sort of transferred the balance of information to the consumer, mm-hmm. or
right.
given him at least an even footing, because before, the car dealer knew everything and the consumer knew nothing until he went there.
Yes. Right. Okay.
Now the consumer can go online, build the car, like at AutoFlex.com. You can go online, build any car you want to build. It understands all the build conflicts. It won't build a car that the manufacturer won't build.
Right.
It'll tell you if you buy this, you're going to get this with it. You can do it all.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway.
Okay. Thank goodness for the internet.
Number one thing that people dislike, non-responsiveness. And I know this from our business. You have to get back with people right away. And when we're talking about non-responsiveness, most of this is internet-based. That is from the internet. People send in an inquiry, and then they don't get a response, or it's a day later. Or they get a response, and then nothing else after that. No one ever follows up with them. So that's actually the number one complaint, is non-responsiveness.
To internet and a phone inquiry.
Yeah.
Sure. Most dealerships now have at least a person dedicated to internet business, though, right?
True.
Oh, yeah. Most dealerships have a lot of people dedicated, because that's where probably 30 or 40% of our business comes from.
I do want to say this, though. As we go through, you know, what they like and dislike, I'm going to be the advocate for both sides. And on the dealer side, if you had any idea, people, how many inquiries come in. I mean, we get...
It's phenomenal.
We get hundreds.
Yeah, we get hundreds.
A day.
Yeah.
So another dealership might even get... You know, hundreds to thousands.
And we may get more than a typical Chevrolet, Ford, Mazda dealer would.
Oh, because we're multi-brand.
Because we do business
for
all over.
Everybody.
We do business all over the country, and we do all makes and models. So that may be the reason. But a great deal of our resources is devoted to getting back with people right away. It's important.
But the people stay, you know, your salespeople stay so busy. And if they're tied up with clients in the office, they can't respond right away.
Mm-hmm.
But that is one of the biggest complaints, is non-responsive.
Okay, number two, bait and switch. And again, this sort of goes back, it sort of goes back to the internet. they'll look online, see a car, And they'll go down there and the car will be gone.
Of course.
Okay. Right. And I will say, in the defense of everyone in the car business, you cannot have a real-time changeout on your internet site to reflect the sale of a car.
At all.
It takes you 24 hours minimum to get that car off.
Well, you guys have that happen, right? For instance, on the pre-owned, the big pre-owned lot where, you know, like you say, it pops up on the internet and it's gone.
Yes.
I spent about 5 minutes in an email discourse with a guy yesterday because he'd called in and asked about a car, and I sent him an email back and said, sorry, we sold it yesterday. It was sold yesterday evening. Now, the complaint with these people is bait and switch. That's where they would call and say, do you have the car? And they'd say, sure, come on down.
Yeah. Right.
And then you get there and the car's not here. Well, we don't do that. So I told the guy, no, the car was sold yesterday. And he goes, well, why was it on your site then? And I said, because we outsource that. We have a service that takes the cars on and puts them off for us. 24 hours is the best I can get out of them.
Oh, you know? And that's, you know, if you forget it on the weekend.
Yeah.
Nothing's happened because we don't even have our personnel there to forward the information over to them. And many times it takes longer than that.
Well, in pre-owned cars, we sold, in a week in Arlington, we had 42 pre-owned cars, and a week later we had 19.
So it happens.
We have a stock of 150 to 170 cars, and we do a great deal more than that each month of used cars, of pre-owned, lease returns, that kind of thing. So it's just you can't really keep up. You just do the best you can.
So
but you have to be honest with your customer, too.
True. And if you start shopping for your car on the internet on Monday thinking I'll go look on Saturday, forget about it.
The car won't be there.
It won't be there, especially if it's hot merchandise.
Well, when the complaint is bait and switch, there obviously you're looking at a technological issue, but is there real bait and switch going on?
Yeah, I think. I've worked at places years ago when I worked for car dealers that would tell you never to tell someone that the car had been sold because you had to get them in. That was the whole deal. Okay. No, it's not good.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can't sell them something if they don't come in. And here, I will say this because we've all worked for all of us came from car dealer background. You'll have an advertised vehicle, and it'll be the stripped down version that nobody wants, the 5-speed.
The green with
air.
The orange interior.
Yeah, just this, and it's the cheapest car. And so there's one car, and they would put that one stock number on there, and we did have it for sale. But somebody would buy that darn car.
But that was the car they wouldn't let you sell, too. That was you can't sell
Saturday,
that car.
Not till Saturday.
Yeah.
But they would advertise it earlier in the week. So people would come in. Well, when they saw the car, that's the one for $14,995. So, because they didn't have all the details. So then you'd switch them over to something that you – and I guess you call that bait. It's fishing.
Yeah,
sure.
And it's not done just at car dealerships. I'm sorry. Best Buy.
Yeah.
There you go, some free advertising.
Happens everywhere.
Every store out there does it. They bring you in on the low-priced item, and then they switch you up to something else.
Okay, communications disconnect. Consumers really complained about being frustrated with not getting accurate information or timely information when they inquired by email or online. And I think back to number one, the non-responsiveness. Number two, there's a lot of places that don't want to tell you anything on email or by the internet because they want you to come in. So they are non-responsive intentionally. And that's just, again, that's just a fact of business. It's not a good thing, but that's what we deal with. Finally, unsatisfactory customer service. Rude or arrogant salespeople or being hyped, pressured into buying something. That was the number four, and you do run into that.
Of course.
We've seen it. And finally, the last one, time wasted. This was the number five, not the number one, but the number five. Still a big thing, time wasted. Takes so long to get a car sometimes. The average time in a showroom is 5.5 hours, according to MSN.
Five and a half hours.
That's in order to be able to go in, negotiate the deal, get a price, and make a decision. 5.5 hours. Because they have such a process involved. It really shouldn't be that way. I mean, it takes about an hour to get a car from us.
Well,
and that's credit approval. That's everything.
A lot of it because we've honed the way we do our business. First of all, you can start the process over the phone or on the internet by filling out your application. So we can get all the credit stuff done behind the scenes before you ever show up. So there's 2.5 hours.
Right.
Gone.
Right.
Okay, we take care of that behind the scenes. And then you go ahead and tell us the type of vehicles you're interested in. And since we're not limited to any make or model, we can collect the different vehicles here. You can come in, test drive everything, figure out what you like the best.
Right.
And narrow it down instead of you know, coming in, first you have to fill out the paperwork before you can look at anything.
Well, and that's the thing people really dislike, and it's unfortunate. The way mechanically that a car dealer works, they're not set up to do what we do.
Right.
So you could call on the phone, get all that stuff out of the way, and just come in and get a car.
They won't do it that
way. Won't do it that way. They want you to be there. They want you to be really committed to the deal. They want you to spend a lot of time there. Because in the old days, they said that a customer would shop for an average of 7 hours or whatever. And if you were the one sitting in front of them at that 7 hour when that clock turned,
you win.
You won.
Ding.
I swear to goodness, that's what they used to train.
And it's true. Yeah. It's true, too, because when I was selling cars, whoever was starting out first thing in the morning, you know what? You were more likely to get the sale at 3 p.m. after they were already exhausted and frustrated by the way they'd been treated all day. You know, when they're starting out fresh early in the morning, they're still they got their fighting.
Right.
You know,
so you
they're worn down by
the keep them there, grind them down, and finally make them give up and sign.
Well, and again, it's unfortunate because that's one of the things people really, really hate is the time it takes to get a car. I mean, that's a big deal.
And since we hate wasting time.
Yeah, we don't do that.
We don't want to waste your time. We don't want to waste our time. So come to AutoFlex and save your time.
And Waddle tells us it's time for a break.
Time.
All right.
Talk about time.
Fantex 43733. Call us and talk to Dave and Tammy, 877-881-1053, the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
The A-team's on duty for you this morning. It's David Blassengame and Tammy Pickard from AutoFlex and the Saturday Morning Test Drive. Fantex is at 43733. David's laughing over there. It's Fantex.
I got one right here. It says, it took me about 5 minutes to shop for a car. They ran my credit, found out I have a zero credit score, and then showed me the door. That's not good.
He saved 4 hours and 45 minutes on that
He sure
deal.
Did, didn't he?
Yeah, okay. Here's the deal. Call one of our offices. We have a division called AutoFlex 2, and AutoFlex 2 helps people that have either no credit or poor credit. And we can help him, and we can help him get a car. So you just have to have the right sources that will handle stuff like that. So if I'm not sure if he's closer to Dallas or Fort Worth, but either 817 or 972-234-1234, ask for AutoFlex 2, and one of the AutoFlex 2 specialists will be able to help you. And it'll take a little more than 5 minutes, but you'll actually drive away.
Nice.
There you go.
So
okay.
Be sure and walk or take the bus on the way.
Because you're driving home. Away from AutoFlex.
Talk to Dave and Tammy, 877-881-1053. We're working the list of the good and bad of the car dealership.
Okay, what do people love about car dealers? Number one thing, they just want somebody to be friendly.
Friendly and professional.
And professional.
Courteous and respectful service proves to be the biggest crowd pleaser no matter where you go.
Who knew?
I mean, restaurants.
Doesn't matter.
Stores.
Who
did?
No, yeah.
Yeah, who knew? No, I like to be beat up and, you know, I'm from New Jersey. I want to be, you know, cursed and knocked around a little bit.
They like fast, professional, courteous people. Number two, they want fast response. They want information. Just like you, just like this gentleman that he got his response in 5 minutes or less, it sounds like.
Might not be the answer you're looking for.
But they want fast response. So that needs to be a key when you're doing business with somebody. But again, no matter what business. Finally, forthright and accurate answers.
Oh, imagine that.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough sometimes to get accurate information. You can get a lot from the internet, but when it comes down to actually dealing with the car, then you have to depend on the dealer you're talking to give you fast, accurate information.
And you know why I think it's so easy to get that from us is because we aren't married to one brand.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't
so
care
we
what
don't
they
have
get
to sneak around or try to avoid the answer to this
tricky
or that.
Tricky little answers.
No, we can just tell
half
you the
truths.
Real.
Mm-hmm, yep.
Here's the real deal. And here's the better deal on this vehicle. Okay, you've got rebates over here. This car holds its value better. This car's not available. You know, this car doesn't have the best service, you know, history, and this car's going to cost you the most to maintain, et cetera.
And you guys do honestly say that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
well,
that's one of the coolest things about working with AutoFlex.
But clean dealerships. And you would think that would just go without saying, but I personally have seen some really, really dirty places. Now, that's almost in the past, though, because most dealers now really have great facilities. But they want clean vehicles. Clean vehicles and clean dealerships.
Oh, yeah, like the used vehicle inventory. It's a real turnoff when you get in a car and it's just not clean. And
exactly.
That happens?
And now,
well, every now and then you'll have a used car that maybe just came in or something. And you really shouldn't show a car before it's been detailed because, you know, you're showing somebody else's dirt. And
finally, the last thing on the list, or the number five priority, was a good price. So that really sort of tells you something also, because everyone always talks about, well, I'm going to get a great price. But when you look at the priorities that people actually put on things, they want friendly professional service. They want fast response. They want forthright, accurate answers. They want a clean facility. They like the car to be clean. And the fifth thing they list was getting a fair and competitive price.
So it's relationship, 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 money.
Exactly. And that's really how it works.
A fair price, not absolutely necessarily the cheapest, but a fair competitive price. You know, just be competitive and you're good to go.
Anyway, if you wanted to read that, you can go to autoflex.com, click on the Facebook. That's from autogurus.com. They're described as an internet automobile dealer expert. Now, I'm not sure exactly what that means.
Car gurus? Is it car gurus or auto gurus?
It is car gurus.
Cargurus.com.
Yep. Okay, moving right along. The marriage between Mazda and Ford may be on the rocks. Yeah, Mazda.
Well, 50% of marriages don't make it.
In divorce, that is true. Mazda has been building cars in conjunction with Ford in the United States for a long time. They've got a facility in Michigan that they've been using. There was a story published in Japan yesterday on the HNK News Agency saying that Mazda is going to transfer production of the Mazda 6 vehicles to the Yamaguchi plant in Japan from Michigan. Now, Mazda has not verified or denied this, and Ford refused comment, but it's an interesting thing. You've got the changing price of the yen has made it less profitable to build cars here than it is there, so that's part of the thing. The other thing is the union costs of building a car in Michigan are higher than the cost for building that same car in Japan.
Of course.
So two things that bear on that, but it's interesting that that they may be breaking up.
Well, David, are there car? You mentioned the Yamaguchi plant. Are there car plants that weren't affected or back to full operation?
So? There's tons of car plants in Japan. That, yeah, it only affected the very north area of Japan, and there's manufacturing throughout the whole country.
Okay.
So, although Mazda was one of the most stricken manufacturers because five of their models are made in northern Japan, but this has to do with more with the economy, I think, than anything else.
And they'll be able to move. I mean, that'll all be fixed in no time. But they are very forward-thinking and get stuff done really fast.
All right. Now, here's the big news, folks. Oscar Mayer has unveiled its new Wienermobile.
It's about time.
Did you know that the Wienermobile has been on the road for 75 years? That's when the first Wiener. Anyway, it's the launch of the new food truck marks the 75th anniversary of the Wienermobile, and it's going to be celebrated by Tyler Florence, the host of TV series The Great Food Truck Race, and partnered with by Oscar Mayer. And they're going to unveil the new Wienermobile in New York Times Square this next week.
With relish.
It is, yeah. Underneath
I relish today.
Yeah, underneath the Wienermobile is actually a Ford E-Series van. The new food truck will be 30 feet long, which is 3 feet longer than the old Wienermobile, which somehow indicates that
size
maybe...
Size does matter.
Yes, it does. All right.
All right.
And finally...
That's 36 inches.
Before we go in...
3 feet.
To...
Just saying.
Stop. Okay.
3 foot longs.
Or 3 foot longs, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Or a yard.
A yard of dog.
Y'all are silly. Okay. Chrysler is taking full majority... Fiat is taking full majority ownership of Chrysler. The Italian automaker is going to pay an additional $500 million to the United States Treasury to buy them out of Chrysler Motor Car Division, and that will give Fiat 52% of Chrysler and controlling interest, which is what the chairman of Fiat wants, Marchionne wants.
But that's still like a short sell because it's really like over $1 billion that's owed, right?
Well, they still owe $1.3 billion. The thing that upsets me a little bit is the Treasury says that they're very unlikely to recover the full difference, which is $1.3 billion.
So that's all of us taxpayers. Would we like to collect that $1.3 billion?
1.3.
Can we all get involved in collecting that money? Can we all become collectors of that money? I would like to help collect that money.
You could call Sergio and ask him. I mean, he's the CEO. We'd like our share.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
So, David, are they buying the government, our government, out of the car business now?
Well, they're trying to. And it's sort of interesting. President Obama has showed up in 4 automotive plants in the last 2 weeks, toured the plant and touted the bailout as being his responsibility. And actually, it was President Bush that began the bailout.
Well, did he say it was his responsibility or just how great it worked?
He took credit for it, actually. Oh. Yeah. And it did work, obviously, because they're still in business and they wouldn't have been. But the credit should go to both President Bush and President Obama because they he started it and President Obama finished it off. The other thing is, it's sort of sad to be celebrating the fact that we had to bail out 2 of our largest manufacturers and everyone wasn't paid back. And a lot of people just plain got hosed.
Because the stockholders just
got hosed because they didn't get paid anything for the value of the stock.
Should we be happy with this deal or?
Well, I think they're still in business. So we should all be happy because it has not caused a lot more problems. So in retrospect, the bailout was a successful thing, although it wasn't pretty.
It just wasn't
it worked.
A great thing for everyone.
Exactly.
Know? Somebody's got to lose somehow.
All right. Anyway. I have a special guest scheduled to join us here on the Saturday Morning Test Drive, Mark Vann, General Motors New Business Development Director. He's coming up here on the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
Good morning. The Saturday Morning Test Drive continues. You can fan text 43733 or call 877-881-1053 and talk to Dave and Tammy and our special guest who joins us the second half hour of this morning show, David.
You got Mark Vann on the line. Mark is from Detroit. He is with General Motors, new business development. Good morning, Mark.
Mark?
Oh, that was me. Hang on.
Way to go.
Okay, we'll keep moving. Mark is going to be joining us in just a minute. Mark is sort of the guru of alternative fuels, knows a lot about the Volt, knows a whole lot about the cars that we'll be driving in the future and the fuels that we'll be using. Mark, are you there? Hello, Mark. We still not got Mark.
Oh, bummer.
He was on the phone. I talked to him.
Oh, yeah, he's there.
This is a professional situation here. Well, in the meet while y'all do that, why don't we talk about the Hyundai partnership, David?
Yeah, that's interesting. Hyundai has announced their partnership for Guaranteed Residual Value program. They have started. Are we on, Mark?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
There we go.
We'll talk about Hyundai later, people.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
Mark, I've sort of introduced you already, so everyone knows that you're with General Motors and you're with the new business development of General Motors. We had an opportunity 2 weeks ago to drive and review a Chevrolet Volt, which is certainly a revolutionary car, both in the way it drives, feels, and looks.
Now, we haven't discussed it on the air today, but we want you to help us with that.
Absolutely, yeah. At GM, we're very proud of our Chevy Volt. It is truly a unique product. You know that it's a car that combines electricity and gasoline. It's electric for up to its first 25 to 50 miles, depends upon how you drive, and then after that, it switches over to a gasoline-powered generator. It allows you to go as far as you want to go. You know, many years back, we had a product called the EV1, which was a pure electric vehicle. What we found out there was that people were pretty much tethered. You know, it was a single-purpose vehicle, 100 miles, and you were done, and it took multiple hours to recharge. So one of the things we wanted to do with the Chevy Volt was have it so that, you know, you could drive your daily drive. You know, if it's 40 miles or less, you know, you could use electricity. And then after that, if you wanted to take it on a long trip, you could drive coast to coast with it. You know, so it was a very flexible car that allowed the consumer, you know, a lot more choices.
Well, and it prevents that range anxiety that people have talked about. And certainly that's a real thing with buyers, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Range anxiety is a function of not being able to get to where you want to go, you know, and without having to endure, you know, a long stop for charging or find an appropriate station, you know, for a fill-up. you know, there's gasoline stations, you know, all over the country. I think there's about 130,000 gasoline stations. But, you know, for alternative fuels and other things, you know, they're far more scarce. So range anxiety, you know, is one thing the Chevy Volt was really aimed to address. And, you know, and I think the consumers in the marketplace have said, you know, that it's been a very valuable thing to have that extended range capability.
One of the other things I thought was really cool, and I'm into cool stuff, was that the center console is sort of all a touch screen. It's like a one big iPod screen.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the differences we made with the car, that it's revolutionary from a propulsion system, but we also wanted to give the consumer, you know, something pretty non-traditional on the inside as well. So it's got controls that are capacitive type buttons. They are a lot like an iPod, if you will, in their touch and their feel, but it gives it a very clean look to it. It has two big LCD screens, you know, that you look at different things, and the Chevy Volts also have navigation systems, in addition to a lot of good information on your fuel economy and, you know, how your efficiency is going.
Yeah, the one of the cool things I thought was that it shows your battery level, but then when the battery runs out, it goes to your fuel tank level.
Right.
On the same gauge.
Because
it's basically got a video screen for gauges. It's not, it doesn't have traditional gauges.
Right, right. It's an LCD, and it's somewhat configurable, you know, by the driver, you know, themselves. So there was a lot of nice features built in there, you know, and especially when it comes to electric and gasoline. And then I don't know if you had a chance to drive it when it switches over. When your battery has gone so low that it'll switch to gasoline, you'll see the battery switch to a pump, you know, on the indicator. But also what I found in many drives is many of the drivers don't even notice, you know, that the engine is now on, you know, and so we wanted to make it a very seamless type thing where, you know, the driver didn't have to do anything.
You only hear the noise. That's the big difference. It's really bizarre to drive a car and not hear an engine.
Right.
And you know, all you hear is the tires on the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was the strangest thing for me.
It is. Yeah, it's the strangest thing for me, too, because you start and you don't hear anything, but you go. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I was surprised
with. It doesn't match with the trees going by.
Right.
You go pretty darn fast, pretty darn quick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's zippy, and there's not really a transmission, I guess.
No, well, it's got a single speed, if you will. It's 0 to 60 time is about 9 seconds. It can do 100 miles an hour in electric. You know, just on electricity alone, you know, many other hybrids in the marketplace that after 25 miles an hour or so will switch, you know, to gasoline, you know, and take you as far as you want to go. Mm-hmm. But this one, you know, in pure electric mode, you can go 0 to 60 in 9 seconds. So it's a good thing. And what we're finding is consumers are really enjoying, you know, the peace and quiet, you know, in the interior of the vehicle, that no one's missing the engine sounds.
No.
That we know of.
The other thing I thought was really interesting when we talked was about the batteries and how they are maintained and the research that you guys did and what you found out about how to keep them at maximum charge.
Yeah, absolutely. The battery is the most critical element of this car. A battery is like a person, and it likes to be at about 70 degrees Fahrenheit. You know, when it's too cold, they're not very efficient, and when they're too hot, they're not very efficient. So the Chevy Volt has a liquid-cooled battery. In fact, the cooling system of the Chevy Volt is divided into three different circuits, if you will. One cools the battery and tries to maintain a optimal temperature of the battery. We have a second circuit that's for the power electronics. The power electronics are the things that translate the battery's DC into AC for the electric motor that drives the wheel, and they too, you know, produce a lot of heat and like to be at a certain temperature. And then the third loop of the coolant system is for the engine. So we have three different cooling loops to keep these electric components, you know, at the optimal range. And then part of the importance of keeping like the battery at the optimum temperature is battery life. You know, that the Chevy Volt, we warrant to bear battery for 8 years, 100,000 miles, and we really designed it for 150,000 miles. But to get there, there's two things you have to do is, one, keep it in optimum temperature. Second, keep it in optimum state of charge, which is kind of between, say, 25% and 80%, you know, of the charge of the vehicle.
Yeah, and on to that charging, you know, in the research that we did, we found out that you can charge one by plugging it in at the house, but there is a faster charger system, a rapid charger.
How much does that cost?
Yeah, because we couldn't find out what the cost was on that.
Okay, it depends on your installation mostly. I believe the hardware is offered by many different manufacturers from GE to Coulomb to SPX. It's somewhere, I think, in the $600 to $800 range. Then you need a licensed contractor to install it in your house, you know, according to code, and that typically is costing about $1,000 to $1,200. So the faster charger, you know, is about $2,000, and the difference it makes with our car, with 220-volt or 240-volt charging, you charge in about 4 to 5 hours. With the standard wall outlet, you know, 110-volt, you know, circuit, that you charge in about 10 to 12 hours, which suits most people just fine. And there's a cord set that comes with the car, you know, that allows you to do the 110-volt. But if you want to charge a little faster, you certainly can opt for, you know, the installation of the higher capacity charger.
Now, are there any public charging stations where people can pay for right now, is there anything set up anywhere where somebody can go drive their Volt and plug it in and pay?
There's a few places. I believe California has really taken the lead on that. But as General Motors, we kind of advocate that there's two places that we really think is ideal to charge a vehicle, and that is at home and in the workplace. You know, that you look at a life of a vehicle and, you know, where it spends its time, that about 90% of the time of a vehicle, it's at home or it's at work.
Or at work, right.
You know, so, you know, we've heard of, you know, charging stations going in at shopping malls and, you know, supermarkets and those type of things, but you're only going to be there for half hour to maybe 2-3 hours at most.
You haven't met me.
Yeah. Okay, you can be there longer.
Yeah. I hear that they are building a charging station. They're supposed to be putting a charging station in at a North Park Mall, which is a nice mall here in Dallas, Texas.
Yeah.
But we'll have to research that.
I think GE is putting in some charging stations there already.
I wonder what the cost will be to.
I don't know. And that's the other thing. I'm not sure how that would work if you have a credit card. I bet it's a credit card swipe.
Yeah.
What we're finding so far with some of these retailers is they're offering free charging.
Oh, come to our mall.
You know, visit their business.
Of course.
That's smart.
That's really smart.
Yeah.
Come in here, go shopping, watch a movie, and your car's recharged when you leave.
Right. You know, the cost to charge a Chevy Volt is about $1.50, you know, what it costs you in electricity. You know, so it's not a lot of money.
That's not bad at all.
Better than gas.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right.
Now, what about this $7,500 tax credit? I know with some of the other hybrid vehicles, it was for the first, you know, however many sold. So do you have any idea how many of the first Volts will get this $7,500 tax credit?
I believe it's into, you know, I think a 500,000 vehicles or 1 million vehicles. I'm not quite sure, but it applies to, you know, all, you know, advanced technology vehicles, and it comes from the federal government. Mm-hmm. So I believe that's part of the incentive in order to get this technology really accepted in the marketplace, is that you have to make it cost effective for the consumer. So the $7,500 was from the U.S. government in order to help that consumer situation, you know, to get their acceptance. And I believe, you know, the president has said that he's trying to get 1 million plug-ins on the road by 2015. So I think the incentive needs to stay around at least until that time frame.
Okay. Yeah, that's a very ambitious number, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Yeah. That's that, because I think one of the other things we haven't discussed, and we will after the break, is just the cost of the Volt and the cost of development and also the marketing plans that you guys have for that vehicle.
Okay.
All right.
All right, Mark, stay with us. We're going to take a short break, and back on the other side, we'll ask Mark those questions and look to the future, what the future holds for alternate-powered vehicles. Mark Vann, the General Motors new business development director, is on with us on the Saturday Morning Test Drive.
We're back to the Saturday Morning Test Drive, brought to you by AutoFlex Leasing.
Saturday Morning Test Drive, rolling on your Saturday morning. Fan text your comments, questions, 43733. Also talk with our special guest and David and Tammy, 877-881-1053. We are visiting with Mark Vann, General Motors new business development director. David?
Mark, you there?
Yes, I am.
Back with you again. We've gotten a couple of fan texts. One of them notes that the Volt is $40,000. Now, that's before, obviously, the rebate that you can get with it, but it still makes it a fairly expensive car. Are you guys, I mean, honestly, do you lose money on these cars? Because I know that development costs must have been tremendous.
Yeah, they are very expensive cars, and no, they are not a profitable vehicle for us to manufacture today. But yet there's a lot to learning cycles. You know, what a learning cycle is, you know, the example of the first laptops and the first cell phones that are out there, they were outrageously expensive. But yet what you saw was the next generation became smaller, lighter, cheaper, better. And, you know, and so to get to a second and a third generation, you have to go through a first generation of vehicle. So, you know, the current Chevy Volt price, and actually its sticker price, is somewhere around $42,000. And, yeah, we aren't making really any money on the vehicles at that type of price. But there's a lot of other reasons why people buy Chevy Volt. And one of the, from an economic standpoint, you know, the Chevy Volt has a 9-gallon gasoline tank on it. And what we're finding is consumers are going 1,000 miles between fill-ups. And they're making good use of that electricity, you know. So the $100 or $1.50 a day, you know, to drive, you know, your 40 to 50 miles versus, you know, using gasoline to do that. So, you know, that's part of it. But yet, the number one priority we have, you know, in General Motors is getting the cost down on the Chevy Volt in order to get the mass market appeal.
Well, and just like with the iPhone, if everybody remembers the first iPhone, what were they, $600?
Yeah.
And now what, can you get an iPhone for $50?
$49 or something,
No, and the Kindle, you know, the iPad, everything gets a little bit cheaper. Just like with flat screen TVs, it gets a little bit cheaper as time goes on. So, right? It'll be more affordable in the future.
Absolutely, Tammy. That's our plan, you know, and that's what you learn. In our first generation of car, the car you see today, we pushed it to market very fast. You know, from the time we first showed the concept to the time it hit the streets was a little less than 3 years.
That's amazing.
And in doing so, you know, we, you know, made sure it had plenty of capability, and we probably over-designed it in a few areas. You know, but with this next generation coming in a few years, we'll have now, you know, learned from this first generation of vehicle what we didn't need, you know, and take the cost out of there. And then also, you know, the supply base is part of the story, too, that there wasn't a lot of people out there that could make the power electronics and the battery components we need in order to make this vehicle roadworthy. So you kind of pay a premium there, too. But now that many other entrepreneurs have jumped into the business, you know, that we can see some economies of scale and some good price competition for parts and pieces that go into it as well.
You know, we talked yesterday about the future, and I asked you if we would all be driving electric cars in 50 years, and you, to my surprise, said you didn't think so.
Yeah, there's always going to be a mix of fuels out there because there's different drivers with different needs. You know, the example, you know, of a large vehicle. There's a lot of fleet customers out there and a lot of over-the-road trucks. That right now, batteries are pretty weight prohibitive. You know, that if you scaled the, you know, if you wanted 40 miles of electric range on a vehicle the size of a Tahoe or Suburban, you know, that battery would be a couple thousand pounds in weight. You know, so batteries don't scale up as well as some other fuels. And one of the other fuels we've been working on at GM is hydrogen. You know, and hydrogen fuel cells. You know,
yes.
These are vehicles, you know, that run on compressed hydrogen. They emit no emissions whatsoever other than water vapor. They refuel, you know, in about 5 minutes time to maximum range, and that they, you know, can scale up to bigger vehicles without the weight penalty of a battery.
Well, and hydrogen, I think, is the most, it's the most abundant element on Earth.
Absolutely. It's actually, in the universe, is made up of primarily hydrogen and helium. The problem with hydrogen is it isn't very well by itself. There's no hydrogen wells, there's no hydrogen mines, there's no hydrogen pockets of, you know, gas under the ground. It's usually coupled with something, so you need to split it, you know, from either water or natural gas as done today. And in fact, you know, a real interesting stat we always tell people is that there's enough commercial hydrogen produced in the United States today to fuel 13 million fuel cell vehicles. And the number one consumer of that commercial hydrogen is the oil companies. They use it in the process of taking crude oil and turning it into gasoline. So if we reduce our dependence upon petroleum, then we make a lot of this commercial hydrogen available for fuel cell type vehicles.
Well,
so what's the holdup?
Let's get it going. Well, right now, it's the same as the Chevy Volt, that hydrogen fuel cells are expensive. And the other thing is we lack is an infrastructure for deploying of hydrogen. And that's part of the reason why you see saw battery electric vehicles come first. Everybody's got a wall socket.
Right.
You know, but yet not everybody has, you know, hydrogen nearby. We have a program working in Hawaii where we'll be putting fuel cells into Honolulu and places like that. In Hawaii, they make synthetic natural gas from gasoline, and in the process have a lot of waste hydrogen in their natural gas lines. So they're coming up with a process to extract that waste hydrogen and the fuel cell vehicles with it.
So what we need is an infrastructure to refuel hydrogen fuel cell vehicles.
Absolutely.
So that's the financial future too, isn't it?
That is. That is.
Pay attention, listeners.
Hydrogen's a good alternative, and Germany and Japan are moving very quickly on hydrogen infrastructure, in fact, more so than the United States.
Well, you know, it sounds like that's probably where we should be putting our resources, though.
That's part of it, you know, that, again, you know, we have to transition, and it's going to take some time. And in the meantime, too, you know, things like E85 ethanol and CNG, you know, will also provide a very important role, you know, going forward, as long along with, you know, internal combustion engines that run on gasoline with a lot of advanced features such as, like, spark ignition direct injection, that's gasoline direct injection, variable valve timing, cylinder deactivation, six-speed automatics. So there's a lot of things we're working on at GM. We're not just a, you know, a company working on a single future technology. We're working on pretty much the whole gamut, you know, of different technologies for different customers and different vehicles out there.
Well, that's really exciting. I think that you guys need to marry that with your marketing and put some commercials out there like that on television and let everybody know where you're going.
Yeah, in the past we had a program called Gas Friendly to Gas Free, and you probably saw our little icons, you know, one for fuel efficiency, one for electric, one for hybrid, one for hydrogen, and we're still trying to tell people that, you know, that again, there's no one silver bullet, you know, that's going to kill, you know, our addiction to foreign oil.
Right.
You know, but we need these different alternatives for the different customers and the different regions, you know, of our country and the globe, you know, in order to reduce our addiction.
All right. Well, we've got a caller. By golly! So let's take the call on line one. It's David. Hello, David.
Hey, everybody. How you doing?
I'm good. Is this Ruggles?
It is.
Oh,
our caller's calling from Las Vegas.
Hey.
Morning, Dave.
Hey, guys.
Mark Vann is with us on the line.
Hey, good morning, Dave.
Yeah, I've been listening. Hi, Mark. How you doing?
I'm wonderful.
Hey, I've been hearing you talk about fuel cell.
Mm-hmm.
It just occurred to me while I was listening to you that before I moved here from Chicago, Chicago had three city buses that were fuel cell for over 12 years, and they've been running in that city for, I mean, every day one would go in front of my apartment, east and west going downtown. So it's not just theory. I mean, they're out there running, and of course that's a big bus carrying lots of people.
Right.
That's excellent.
Yeah, that shows about how you can scale it up to bigger technologies. And then in the fall of 2007, General Motors launched Project Driveway. That's a program where we put fuel cell vehicles in the hands of consumers in Los Angeles, New York, and Washington. We put 100 cars on the road, and they've accumulated 2 million miles of hydrogen fuel cell driving in the hands of real consumers. So we know the technology works. What we really need help with is the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So we just need to get that going.
Yep.
Well, I know Dave Ruggles is a big proponent of Ann Coren's theory on diversification, and it sounds like General Motors is following the same thought line that you have to diversify and have a number of different energy sources in order to become less dependent on oil.
So we need to get some energy groups to couple with the car manufacturers and everybody kind of get in bed together to make this thing work.
Right. You know, and the predominant thing to us, we always say, is it depends on the price of gasoline. And if gasoline stays relatively cheap, you know, we're not going to see a lot of movement in, you know, the direction of these alternative fuels and many things. But if gasoline was to spike, you know, I know lately it's been, you know, over $4, but if it was to go to $6 to $8, then you would finally see the real big push to get these technologies. But in the meantime, you know, America, we do very well on gasoline, and, you know, the EPA and other people are regulating us to do more miles per gallon, and we're working on those type of things as well. So we do need incentives in order to get consumers to move to these next-generation vehicles.
Inertia being the strongest force on Earth.
Right.
Absolutely.
Well, Mark, how much time do we have, Waddle? 1 minute. Mark,
1 minute.
We really, really appreciate you joining us. Dave, calling in from Las Vegas, we appreciate you calling in and listening, and we'll talk to you soon. Mark Vann has been with us. He is with General Motors New Business Development, and he is a super guest, and we'd like to have you come back in the future, Mark.
I'd love to do that. It's been a pleasure chatting with you guys today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
How interesting was this, everybody?
That was a good show.
It was a good show, and a lot of interesting things. Interesting to see and talk about what we'll be driving in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one real quickly here. I've got a fan text. I've noticed a trend in the last few months. It appears that used car prices have increased. Yes, they have. What's up with that? Supply and demand. 3 years ago, they stopped making new cars. Remember, everybody stopped everything, and all the manufacturers cut way back? Well, guess what? Those cars then were used cars now, but they didn't build them. Supply and demand. Used cars are going up in price. If you're getting one, get it now. Don't wait till next week. It'll cost you more.
And come see AutoFlex because we're shopping out of our lease return inventory. We can get you anything you want.
AutoFlex.com or call
817 or 214-234-1234. 972 or 817-234-1234. Wow, that was old school.
We'll work on this till next week, folks.
Bye. Come back next Saturday morning for the Saturday Morning Test Drive.